Good morning. Well, there's only one way it can be, and this day represents it. The resurrection is the only way we can be free. Christ is risen. Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of that, I would like you, if you have some space toward the middle, to rise up too and squeeze just a little bit toward the middle. Come on now. I know you want to own that end seat, but like we call this the Sunridge squeeze. Like meet your neighbor, say hello, greet them. Yeah, because, you know, there's going to be some people that they didn't come on time and they're at home eating candy right now. And they're going to show up, probably some of my family, actually. But so my name's Brett. I'm one of the pastors here. I want to welcome you on behalf of our staff and our elders, our entire team of volunteers. You know, we're so honored that you came to worship with us on Easter Sunday. You know, that's true of our guests, certainly. But those of you that are here week in and week out, we're really proud in the good way to have you here. And we have a lot to celebrate today. You know, John, in his gospel, he gives the account of what happened on Easter morning. It was early on Sunday, a day like this. It's still dark out, and Mary goes to the tomb, and she finds that the stone has been rolled away. So she rushes to tell Peter and John, and when she gets to them, she says, "They have taken the Lord from the tomb," and they can't help themselves. They run to the tomb. And John takes a self-indulgent moment to let everybody know forever in history that he beats Peter to the tomb. Which, you know, why do you have to pick on the offensive line? I don't know, but he does. But he's a fraidy cat because he stops at the tomb's entrance, and Peter rushes by, and when he goes in, he sees the strips of linen lying there, as well as the burial cloth that had been around Jesus' head. And John records that it's all folded neatly, like Jesus had all the time in the world, and he didn't want to leave a mess. John enters behind Peter, and he believes. And then in verse 10, the disciples go back to their homes. Now, isn't that weird to you? It's like, you can tell it's guys, right? It's like compartmentalization is a great thing. Oh, resurrection? Let's go home. Like, on to the next thing. But Mary lingers. And as she lingers at the outside of the tomb crying, the risen Christ appears to her, and she believes, and she clings to Jesus. And he says to her, "Instead of staying here and clinging to me, go to my brothers and tell them," which is a great sermon for any Christian. We don't spend all of our time hanging out with Jesus. Sometimes we have to go and tell somebody about him, but that's another sermon. It's Easter. When Mary tells them about the Lord, then evening time comes, and the disciples find themselves locked away in a room, having their little secret meeting because they're fearful. And Jesus appears to them, and he says, "Peace be with you." And he shows them his hand and his side. And in verse 24, Thomas, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. Where's Thomas? I mean, what does Thomas have going on that's so pressing that he's not here? Was this the night to rearrange the sock drawer or what? What pressing matters does Thomas have? Which, by the way, it's a good little footnote. Never miss church, because you never know what's going to happen, right? Later, when the disciples get with Thomas, they say, "We have seen the risen Lord." And do you remember Thomas's response? What is Thomas known for? Doubting. In fact, that's his first name, right? Doubting Thomas. Talk about an institutional tattoo. You ask one question, and for the rest of your life, you're doubting Thomas, right? You have one doubting moment. You know, Thomas became the patron saint of doubt. Not exactly top shelf sainthood, by the way, right? I mean, he had other options. They could have made him, you know, patron saint of guardianship, like protective angel, or patron saint of illness. Or, you know, there are even patron saints of occupations, butcher, baker, candlestick maker. You can even become a patron saint of a day, or if you really have some street cred, you can be a calendar saint for a month. And Thomas gets doubt. You remember this interaction way back when in Sunday school in verse 25? When Thomas is confronted with the gospel, or he's told that Jesus resurrected by the disciples, he says, unless I see the nail marks in his hand and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it. I've often wondered if Thomas just got the wrong genes. You know, like Peter got the impetuous gene, Matthew got the greed gene, John obviously got the love gene, and Thomas, he got the doubt gene. You have that gene? Maybe you can't even call it doubt. It's hard. Maybe it's just questions. Sometimes you think in your head, I can't line everything up about faith. In this series that we've called Vantage Point, at Sunridge we've been taking a different look at the events of Easter, and we've been looking at through the vantage point of some that were there. We've looked at it through the vantage point of Pilate and of the thief. And for each person, there's some part in some way about the resurrection story that's unbelievable to them. And Thomas is no different. He says, unless I see those nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it. It's not that he's a wimp. I mean, just a few chapters earlier, John records this interaction where Jesus is saying he wants to go back to this region of Judea, and the disciples are fearful because they were persecuted there before, and Thomas comes out with, let us also go that we may die with him. It's not fear that's holding back the faith of Thomas. What happened to Thomas? What happened from the guy with a death wish to become a doubter? From the guy leading from the front, let's go, to he's not even around? From the guy that is so sure that he's willing to die to now he's not so sure? Look at the vantage point of Thomas. Jesus is dead. We looked at the vantage point of Pilate, who had everything to lose, and we saw that the thief had nothing to lose. Thomas has lost everything. Everything that he thought believing in God or following Jesus or being a part of this thing called Christianity or being a Jesus follower, everything that he thought about it died when Jesus died. And when he watched Jesus die, it shattered his faith. Sometimes what we believe is going to be about our faith doesn't line up with what is actually happening. See, it wasn't the lack of empirical evidence that held Thomas back. He saw Jesus do miracles. He saw Lazarus raised from the dead. There couldn't be any question of who Jesus was in his mind. I think that it was pain that pushed Thomas away from his faith, because what he thought was going to be faith wasn't. Can you relate to that? Have you had expectations of what it was going to be like to follow Christ, what your marriage was going to be like, what your family was going to be like, what the direction of your life was going to be like, and it's not exactly lining up? And does that cause you to doubt sometimes? I have seen people who have strong faith have one event that happens in a split second knock them completely off of their faith, like a right uppercut from Mike Tyson. in a split second, their faith, so strong at one moment, is now rendered unconscious. I've also seen people who it's the daily beating on their faith. Not one event, but round after round of body shots from Rocky Marciano that hammers down their faith. They're not knocked out, but by the time the bell rings in the ninth round, their faith can't get up off the stool to fight any longer. Because sometimes life beats the faith out of you. Sometimes the way life doesn't turn out causes questions. Can you imagine Thomas's disappointment, his disillusionment at this time? We have the advantage of looking backwards and seeing the story, but put yourself in Thomas's shoes, in his vantage point. We have a lot to learn. Because I think that in a crowd like this, depending on your season of life, there are things that cause us to doubt and have questions, and that doubt pushes us away from God. But if Thomas's vantage point teaches us anything, it teaches us that faith must coexist with doubt. They live together. In fact, they have kind of a symbiotic relationship. Jesus acknowledges that people will have moments of faith implosions. He chides the disciples for their little faith. Sometimes he's even astonished at how little faith they have. But can I point out something? They're still the disciples. He doesn't kick them off the team because they have a moment or a season where their faith is shaken. Thomas's faith and doubt coexist together. In verse 26, a week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas is with them, and though the doors were locked, something about the disciples and locking doors, I don't know. Jesus came and stood among them, and he said, "Peace be with you." And then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." To which Thomas replied, "Really? You guys ratted me out?" Jesus invites Thomas to read the resurrection like Braille. And when he does, Thomas proclaims, "My Lord and my God." Thankfully, this statement is also recorded by Thomas, if not just for his own sake. And by the way, if you love theology, can I just point out that Thomas, the doubter, is the first to explicitly declare the deity of Christ. But more than that, I want you to see that he is there, which is different than before. Look at it. Verse 26, a week later, his disciples are in the house again, and Thomas is with them. Something keeps him hanging in there. Can I suggest that it's faith? See, Thomas had, even in his doubts and his questions, he had enough faith to show up. He shows up with his doubts. You see, regardless of whether your faith is that there is a God or there isn't, if you're honest with yourself, you have doubts. All of us do. And what Thomas does is he brings his doubts to Jesus along with his faith. The tendency is for those doubts and those questions to push us away, but Jesus invites us to bring those doubts along with the faith. Rather than allowing those doubts and questions to long term to push him away from God, instead he allows his faith to pull him forward with his questions and doubts trailing alongside. How much faith does someone need? I love what Jesus said in Matthew 17. If you have faith as small as a mustard seed, nothing will be impossible for you. Just a little tiny seed. If you got that, you're still in the game, baby. And you know what? If you're a doubter, if you're a questioner, faith can take it. Jesus can take it. The truth is, this church can take it. Sunridge Community Church is a place where people struggle in their faith. This isn't a gathering of perfect people. Look who the pastor is. And so we allow our faith to pull us forward with our doubts and our questions. And faith nor Jesus is afraid of that. You know, Paul writes that these things remain faith, hope, and love. That is, there's a resiliency to those three. And because of that, even if faith is knocked out and can't get off the stool to fight on, it can be resurrected. It's not a matter of how much faith I have at every moment. Sometimes it's a matter of who Jesus is. I love this quote by Sinclair Ferguson, theologian and pastor. The weakest faith gets the same strong Christ as does the strongest faith. You like that one? See, it's not about every moment me being on my A game with my faith. It's about who Jesus Christ is and what he did. You know that following this conversation, Jesus says to Thomas, "Blessed are you for saying that, saying I'm Lord," but there are people coming that will be even more blessed because they're not going to get what you get. Their faith is at another level. And so generation after generation, what happens is sometimes those with the darkest doubts end up with the deepest faith. Thomas goes on to take the gospel to India. This is the faith of Thomas. And if you came on this Resurrection Sunday with doubts and questions, doubts about who Jesus is, doubts about God's existence or how he works or how he doesn't work, if you were yanked out of your concept of who God is, and you need to see it, you need to touch it, look at the vantage point of Thomas. His faith is shaky but resilient. He has his doubts, but he's there. He's got questions, but he shows up to ask them. And everything in him tells him to run and hide, but instead, he is with them. He has a seedling of faith, but he allows God to rain on that and the Son of God to shine on it. And in that moment, Jesus invites him with his doubts to come and trust. Because it's not every moment how much I believe in God, but just remember this, he believes in you. And so then, the resurrection is a reminder. It's a reminder that things come back to life. Even faith. Even weak faith. Even doubting faith. Even faith that says, not until I see it. Even faith that says, not until I touch it. Even dead faith. Even faith that's dead and long gone. Even faith that has been dead so long it stinketh. Christ is risen.